Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm pretty blown away by how many people are here, considering how close I was to not coming myself. Seriously, though, I think it kind of speaks to the topic of what we're about to talk about, of how important the topic is, you know, right now in this moment of the internet industry. So many people are finally doing what it takes to learn how to code, and we're really excited to talk about that a little bit, and hopefully also answer a ton of questions today. So we've kept a lot of the time available just to hear what people have specific questions about and make sure we address those, because those are the best ways to learn instead of just what we've put down here. So I'll quickly introduce myself, then Vin can introduce himself. I'm Nate Westheimer. I co-founded a company called Picture Life, which none of you have heard of yet. And before that, I did a project called ohours.org, and I run an organization in New York called the New York Tech Meetup.
I'm Vin Vacanti. I am a co-founder of a company called Yipit. Yipit is a company where people come to us. They tell us what city they live in. They tell us what they want to do in their city, whether it's go skydiving or go to restaurants. And then what we do is we scour Groupon and Living Social and Amazon and Google and all those different services and recommend deals that match those preferences that they gave us. And we're in 110 cities now, including Austin.
And the reason why both of us are up here is because only a few short years ago, neither one of us coded. We had the aspiration to do it. We had the ideas, but we didn't code. And then at one point or another, we made the decision to do it and to kind of change who we were professionally. And then we both went down different paths, and we're going to get into that a little bit, but we both ended up sort of leading the technology side of our early stage startup after having never done that before. And so that's why we're hoping we can be helpful to you all. There's a hashtag. They ask us to pick one, and the one that we're doing for this one is SX. I guess all of them start with that. We should have put this on the slide, but SX Hope. So with that, I think we can get started a little bit.
Yeah, so I think we're going to essentially take you through all the steps that we internally went through and hopefully explain to you why it's actually possible potentially for everyone in this room to learn to code and to be able to create all the ideas that you have in your mind, put those out into the world and have real people using them, as opposed to eternally looking for technical co-founders to do that work with you. So to get started, I think a lot of people think of prerequisites, right? This is sort of like when you're in college, what are your prerequisites for taking this course? These are the prerequisites that we think need to be true for someone to actually successfully learn to code. Does anyone have any ideas what these prerequisites may be? Does anyone want to sort of shout one of them out? Yes, over there?
Holy shit, I need to learn to code.
Holy shit, I need to learn to code. That's interesting. That's actually, that's good. Let's throw out some more. I think we both actually went through that exact moment. So, yes, back there?
Elementary school math.
Interesting. That's possible, yes. Any more? Patience? So a lot of people think that you needed to have studied computer science in college. The truth is, people who sort of know how to code, I think a lot of people treat them as like these aliens that have come from outer space and landed amongst us and grace us with their presence and sort of build the things that we hope need to be built. The truth is, I think both Nate and I agree that there is one and only one prerequisite to learning to code, and it's something that can be true of anyone in this room, although it may not be true. And that prerequisite is that you really, really need something to be built.
It something is specific.
Something very specific, something that you really, really need, and if this thing doesn't get built, you're either in trouble or you're going to be depressed, and it is your mission to get this thing built.
I don't think either one of us know a single person, to put it another way, who learned how to code and didn't learn to code for a very specific goal in the first place. And not a very specific goal like, I need to learn how to code. A very specific goal like, this product exists in my head, or I need to hack this thing and make it behave in a different way. And I will do whatever it takes in order to make that happen.
I'll give you my example of this, which is I had left finance in New York, and this was summer of 07, and I wanted to build tech startups. I thought that would be a more worthwhile, you know, expenditure of my time and my life. And we had these ideas, and we had a specific idea that we were really excited about. It was called LinkPasser. No one really knows this in our history because it never really made it very far. But it was just a site where people could sort of share what they were reading with their friends online, as opposed to through email, which is predominantly what people did. This was sort of before Twitter, or Twitter was just getting started, and Twitter was more about what you're doing. And we had hired this outsourcer to go build it for us. And we gave him like this 80-page spec. And it was very detailed, and everything was laid out the way we thought it should be. And we handed it to him, and him and his team built it. And they said it was going to take about, you know, 4 weeks. And then about 4 months later, they came back and they said, we built it. It's ready to go. And then I remember grabbing it and excitingly like going to it, right? And this was a site where you're supposed to share links with your friends. And it literally didn't work. You literally couldn't share the link. Like, there was no link sharing capability for our link sharing site. That's how bad it was. And that's when we had a moment. And then, you know, we had quit our jobs. We had told our families we were doing this. And I remember looking at my co-founder, Jim, and saying, like, we're done. Like, this is never going to work. We're not going to successfully use, you know, outsourcers to get this thing done. And it was a real moment for us. And then, you know, it was basically either we quit or one of us basically learns how to code. And I sort of decided to go on the path of teaching myself the back-end coding stuff. And then my co-founder, Jim, taught himself sort of the front-end HTML and CSS stuff. And at the time, it was pretty scary because there was no one out there telling me to teach myself. In fact, most people said, you're an idiot. Like, how, you know, you can't learn to code. Like, no one learns to code. This is not a good use of your time. There was no one saying that. But it was a scary moment. But for us, it was just a need. Like, we wanted this thing to get built. We needed it to get built. We were going to do this. And there was no sort of turning back. And that's how we got started on our journey.
And just real briefly, for me, I had been doing a number of startups already. And, you know, I sort of was on this year and a half cycle of failing, right, where I'd work on the startup for a year and a half, and I'd realize that it wasn't working out, it wasn't the right thing to do, as we all do, and I would move on. And I realized that was a really, really long failure cycle. So I had left my previous startup, and I was just about to do it again. I had this great idea, I had some investors. Because I had sort of built a good network around myself, I had these investors who wanted to give me money, and I was out there trying to recruit a technical co-founder for what I was doing, and I just realized that I was spinning my tires. And the core realization I had was that I wanted to, for my life, be an entrepreneur, be somebody who made stuff. And instead of just thinking about it from one startup to another, I thought, in order to do this as a lifelong thing, this next thing that I do, I have to build. And then I have to be able to quickly move on to something else. So if it fails, I haven't wasted a year and a half of my life, instead I've only wasted a month of my life, or 2 months of my life. And then I can iterate and fail and move on so much faster, and I haven't spent my own money, and I haven't spent somebody else's money. And that's really key. I didn't want to keep spending my social capital to try to get somebody to buy into this crazy dream that this was going to be the one, when I didn't know that this was going to be the one. And then if it wasn't the one, you know, I failed investors that I didn't need to take investment, and I failed co-founders who I didn't need to convince that this was going to be the one. So for me, it was, I need to build something, and I'm no longer going to rely on my social capital in order to get it built, or somebody else's money, or my own money to get it built. I need to be able to be a self-contained entity if I want to continue this as a lifestyle.
And I think as we go through this, the big thing that struck me when I went down this path is that at almost every step, I sort of had these moments where I was like, whoa, this is so much easier than I thought it was going to be. Like, it really is a lot easier. Like, the big, bad view, vision you have of how hard this is going to be, like, it turned out, at least for me, I was in shock at how easily this stuff came about. And there's a lot of reasons why that's the case, and we're going to go through them here. But, like, you know, it really is way easier than you think, and way faster than you think. So let's keep going. Oh, I just told you the big secret. And I do think that, like, technical co-founders are never going to say this to you. Right? Tech people, the last thing they're going to say is, like, oh, you don't need me. It's really easy. You should go just do it yourself. So I feel like there's not many people who say this because it's kind of like, you know, no one wants to give away their secret.
And I think a reason why perhaps there's so many people in this room and why over the last couple of years this has been a growing trend of people wanting to teach themselves how to code is that more and more tech people actually are. You know, the ecosystem has gotten so out of whack in terms of the available amount of tech talent and the amount of people who actually want to see an idea to fruition. And so we've finally gotten to a point where tech people are no longer feeling the need to keep that secret to themselves. And they are actively encouraging people to go out and code and saying, you don't need me. And I don't think this was the case 2 years ago. I don't think this was the case 3 years ago. But finally, now that somebody perhaps you've even talked to, you know, you've gone to with your idea and said, hey, you know, would you build this? And they said, you can build this. You can sit down and get this done.
And I think it's also, and this is very true, 5 years ago, it actually was way harder than it is today. There is, like, literally over the last 5 years, it has gotten way easier. So that's an awesome thing that has happened, which is it's actually gotten super easy to build this stuff. And we'll see a lot of the technologies we're going to describe have really been popularized over the last 5 years. Some of this stuff popularized in the last year and a half. Even when I did it in 2008, it was a lot harder than I think when Nate did it in 2010.
Yeah, for sure. You're smarter than me.
That's true, but...
cool, so there's this concept that I kind of realized when I was learning how to code that I called the sweat lodge, which was just that the difference... So I had tried to learn how to code several times. This was not my first... I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to learn how to code, and it was the first time I sat down and said I was going to learn how to code, and I learned how to code. You know, throughout my entire career, I had gotten frustrated, and I had, you know, gone home at night and thought, you know what, fuck it, I'm just going to build it myself. You know, I'm going to show these guys that I'm working with. And I would sit down overnights or weekends and get the books and view the tutorials, and I would try to learn how to code. And I wouldn't get anywhere. I'd get very frustrated. I wouldn't really understand anything, and I'd drop it. And I'd go back and forth between thinking, oh, I can do this, and thinking that, no, I can't do this. This thing that Vin described earlier about thinking that it's this skill set that you either have or you don't have is definitely something that I can relate to, because I thought it was almost like a foreign language. You know, there's this sort of idea that if you don't learn something when you're super young, you'll never learn it at all. I definitely had that. You know, I thought, you know, the only reason why I speak Spanish is because I learned it when I was 16. And if I had tried to learn it at 25, I would never learn it. Or, you know, I don't think I can ever learn another language again. And really what it is, it's not that you can't learn it, it's that what's really hard to do as you get older is take a huge block of time and dedicate yourself solely to one thing. And that's what I call the sweat lodge, which is the only reason why this time it stuck is because this time I took a 5-day chunk of time and I did nothing but. Literally nothing but. My girlfriend was amazing during that period of time, especially because she would, you know, bring me food and encourage me to wash myself occasionally. But that's literally all I did. I would wake up and I sat down with a tutorial that I'll explain in a bit. And I woke up in the morning and I stuck to it and I kept on going because, listen, at the end of day one, I still had no idea what the fuck I was doing. It was so hard. And at the end of day two, I had no idea what I was doing. But after 5 days of doing it, I felt like I could start to solve problems. And that was the big difference between learning in the past and learning this time. And the big difference was the reason why I took that chunk of time is because the urgency of I need to be building something and I need to learn this was there. You know, like I forced myself to take that huge chunk of time to do it. And I think that anybody who learns needs to have that really long, continuous stretch of concentration to get over these early hurdles. Because while in one breath we're saying it's easy, there are elements of it which are excruciatingly hard in the sense that they're new concepts. And to wrap your head around these new concepts, you do have to really concentrate and really dedicate yourself. So that's something I think is super important, is finding that time. If you have a few vacation days, I mean, take off work and do it. You know, even if it's 3 days, I think you can get very far. But, you know, save up those vacation days and do nothing but. Don't do it like, oh, here and there, I'm going to read this coding book on the beach. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked for anybody that I know.
How many people here own a, like, you know, one of those learning in 24 hours, like MySQL, PHP, Python, Django books, you know? You walk to a Barnes and Nobles and you're like, walk, and you're like, ooh, the computer section. And you like walk over and you see, like, I bought so many of those books and I just never sort of brought myself to it. I actually, when Nate sort of told me about the Sweat Lodge, I realized I went through my own Sweat Lodge experience, which is I was actually going to Brazil to visit my parents who were living in Brazil at the time. And I went there and literally all I did was I would wake up at noon, and then from noon to 3 o'clock, I would go and hang out with my parents and then meet some, you know, cousins and stuff and hang out with them. And then at 4 o'clock, I would go back to their house. And then from 4 p.m. to like 7 a.m., I was just crazily like teaching myself in Brazil. And it was like my own, you know, Sweat Lodge experience. And it was, for me, it was almost like it was a 2 week period where I was down there. You know, obviously I took a couple of days off here and there, but it was very much like a Sweat Lodge experience for myself. And I just remember now that Nate was talking about it.
So we're going to talk a little bit about like what you actually have to understand in the stack. We probably all heard the sort of phrase the stack, like just the string of different technologies that make up building a web application. And to be honest, just at the high level, you know, let's think about you're all going to probably build something that involves users, whether they're real people or people, you know, accessing your API, if that's going to be your product. But we'll just call them users on one end, and then your application on the other end. And, you know, the thing that I think that really, when I'm explaining, like, how, you know, all these servers work and like what you're going to actually have to understand, I think it's actually ended up being very simple in the sense that like I still think of like three parts of the stack, like, and you know, and I've gotten a lot better than I was when I was in the Sweat Lodge, but I still think about it the same way, which is that, you know, all you have to worry about is the fact that on one end there's this user that's wanting something, and the way they tell you that they want something is basically they send you a URL. Right, they're going to be sending you a URL, and it's going to hit your servers, and your server is going to be like, is going to know about this app that you built. Like you're about to go home, you're going to sit down, you're going to build this app, and the server is going to know about this app because you're going to use like Heroku or some other hosting service that we're going to talk about, and that all that really matters, and what you're about to go home and build is this app, and this app is this thing that says, sweet, thank you for this request. I will now do some cool magic with it. And for me, it was like, I still thought like I had these like weird, ideas of what an application was. Like I thought it was like this super complicated, crazy thing. And ultimately, it's not. I mean, it's really just, it's this thing that takes an order from, you know, like somebody sends a URL into it, and you're going to use a framework like Ruby on Rails or Django, and we'll talk about a few of those. And like all that does is just like helps you take that request, do that thing that you want to do, that thing that makes you special, the thing that is your application, and spits it back to the user. And I was like, you know, before I was thinking about, okay, well, then what happens in MySQL? And then what happens in, you know, the caching? And what happens with the, you just don't have to think about any of that stuff. Like, this is super, super simple. User wants something, they tell you they want something in a URL, you do a little stuff with that information, and you send it back. And it just doesn't have to be more complicated than that.
And this was actually super intimidating to me, because like I feel like everyone's heard like the phrase the soup of acronyms it's like HTML, CSS, PHP, MySQL, Python, like Redis, Mongo, Amazon, EC2, S3. There's literally like hundreds and hundreds of these like crazy, you know, Ajax and like all these crazy acronyms, and that can be really intimidating. And the answer is actually like you can ignore almost all of them. Like none of that stuff matters. I mean, I think one of the main points, and we can talk about this, is, but from this, like your goal here as part of this learning to code isn't to become the next CTO of Facebook. Your point is just to learn enough, just a bare minimum, to get your idea out into the wild, to get your prototype where someone can actually try it and use it and give you feedback and find out if you're onto something or it's time for you to move on to your next idea. So like I used to always freak out because I was like, oh my God, I don't know how the server works. Like, what a disaster. How could I ever actually how could I actually put out a prototype? You don't need to know. You don't need to know any of this stuff. The only real thing you need to know is the app level, which we'll get into. But everything else, you either just hopefully use something that's off the shelf, or you know, you go find some guy and you pay him, you know, $50, $100 an hour to just sort of help you set everything up, but you don't worry about it. So this is the other stuff that sort of really worried me, security. I was like, oh my God, someone's gonna hack into my site. No one's hacking into your site. It's not like you're putting out your site and there's like a guy in Russia being like, oh my God, he did it, let me go hack into it. No one knows about your site. No one's going to hack into it. Also, the frameworks you use are built with security in mind. So out of the box, you already get plenty of security, more than enough for what you're doing. Scaling, this is my favorite thing, is like I used to be so freaked out. I was like, oh my God, if a million people hit my page tomorrow, what a disaster. And then like, guess what? No million people are going to hit your page. It's just not going to happen. It's never going to happen. It just will not. And then crazily, some of the stuff you use actually helps with that already. So you don't have to worry about scaling. It's just another one. My code, it's not that nice. It's kind of stupid. I know I'm doing this stuff inefficiently. When you read these learning books, they're all about like, oh, it's got to be maintainable code. You know, my favorite thing that I kept reading was like, what if you switch databases? Your code has to work. And like, you're not going to switch your database anytime soon. You do not have to worry about it. By the time you're switching databases, you've either become a master coder, and this is years later, or you have an awesome technical team that will switch your database for you. That doesn't matter. So the truth is like you don't actually have to worry about much. All this stuff like doesn't matter, does not matter. No one's hacking. No scaling issues. Don't worry about any of that stuff. Focus on just the things you need to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of this is that you have time to learn it. Like, I mean, eventually, yeah, it's good to know some stuff, but like, the Picture Life is a pretty large scale project, and I probably didn't. I mean, I say this because it is embarrassing to like the real nerds. I mean, I was at dinner with some good friends of mine last night, like really good friends, and I was telling them like I had never used this specific function in MySQL before, and like their faces were like, "Oh my God! Like I can't believe you've never used this thing before." And I'm like, "It's okay. Like there's so many things that I don't do right still, and I mean like." And I'm talking hundreds of thousands of lines of code later, like super, super sophisticated platform at this point. And there are so many things. There are so many things that you are supposed to do that I do not do. There are so many things that I'm supposed to know that I do not know. And it's okay. And I'm not embarrassed by it. I mean, I thought their reaction was hilarious, but I am not embarrassed by the fact that I do not know these things, and there will be plenty of things that I will not know even a year into this again. And you just have to be okay with that, because there's just no way you can know as much as people have been doing it for years. And you'll find another funny thing too, because you're new to this, you're going to be learning some stuff. You're going to talk to me in 6 months after I've been doing it for 2 years, And you're going to teach me, you're going to introduce me to something. And so you also find that as well, where, you know, you're going to learn some stuff and you're going to teach somebody who's been doing it for a long time something. But you really, like, you can't learn it all. You can't know everything. And you just got to let go of that fear of, like, needing to know, like, how everything works and how to use everything the best way. It just, you can't do it, and you won't. You won't ever know that.
Yeah, it's leap of faith. I mean, it's also, thankfully, you know, it's not like your users are about to sign up for your site and be like, uh-oh, I bet he's not using that MySQL function. I probably shouldn't use this website. Like, your users have no idea what's actually happening in the background. And often the most successful startups looked terrible in the background, but it didn't matter, because all that matters is the user experience and what they see and how, and if it works for them, they don't care if you're not using that, like, crazy MySQL function. Because users have no idea what's going on in the background. So I'll talk about my experience, sort of what I chose to learn. I learned Python and Django. I learned Python really because I think at the time Google was releasing Google App Engine, and that was based on Python, and I was like, oh my God, like, that sounds cool. I guess if Google's doing it, I should probably learn Python, which is a terrible way to decide a language, but also the key highlight here is it doesn't matter, really, what you pick. There's a couple of good picks, but ultimately it doesn't really matter. I think a lot of people struggle, should I learn Ruby, should I learn Python? You know, it doesn't really matter.
Yep.
It doesn't. This stuff is all actually very similar in the end. And I bet if I went to learn Ruby now, I could probably learn it in a week based on the fact that I've learned Python. And I think the same would be true for Nate. So here's what I did is I bought this book called Learning Python. I remember sitting on my couch. You know, I had worked 4 years in finance and thought, you know, like, I'm sort of a lunatic right now. I'm reading a book with a rat on the cover. Like, what has my life turned into? Like, clearly I've made a huge mistake. How could this be, like, my new career, is reading this book? I remember looking at this, I don't even know, is it a rat or a mongoose? I don't remember what it was, but I remember looking at it and thinking, like, I really wish it was, like, an awesome Python snake, because, like, that would have been much more fun for me. At least it seems like a better animal. And then, so I learned, so Python is actually, these languages gets pretty complicated. I literally read the first 4 chapters, and that was enough. I actually read more and then realized I didn't need any of it. So just the first few chapters were enough just to learn the basics. Because really, there is this... So Python... So Django is actually just a bunch of Python code. And the awesome thing
is... Have people heard of Django before? It's like the Rails equivalent. You know, if you heard Rails, Ruby on Rails... Django is the Rails to Python's Ruby.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, you know, aside from Yipit, I think Instagram uses Django. Hunch used Django. I think a lot of these, Django's very, very popular. Django is, what's awesome about this is all the stuff you're thinking of doing, which is like, oh, I have Python, I'm going to build a web app with Python. Well, guess what? So many people have built web apps with Python that they actually generalized almost everything you would need into something called Django. So Django is almost like these smart people came together and built this awesome thing that sits on top of Python, which actually makes building web apps crazily easy, like 3 days easy. Like literally start to finish, 3 days, something's up and running. And for me, the way I learned Django is I actually did something called this DjangoBook.com. It's actually like an online book. The only thing I would say, though, is that I learned that about 3 years ago, and I think the resources have gotten even better than what I used. We actually have a blog at Yipit called tech.yipit.com. It's a Yipit Django blog. And one of the most recent posts was a developer who recently taught himself Django and now works at Yipit, and he wrote about like the 15 resources that he used in that learning process, just like good stuff to look at. So I recommend go to tech.yipit.com, and you'll see it's the first post on there right now, which is the 15 resources I used to learn Django. But, you know, I read the Python book and then started teaching myself Django, and it was crazy that in like 2 weeks I had a thing up. I mean, 2 weeks, right? Like how, that takes 2 weeks just to like, you know, you've probably been spending like years trying to find that person that could build, you know, the stuff for you and build those relationships in 2 weeks. It's crazy. It's really, really fast. It's so fast. So, maybe you can talk, Nate, about your experience learning Ruby on Rails.
Yeah, so I did on the left, the RailsTutorial.org. When I did that sweat lodge I described, I was basically in that the entire time. And the guy's kept it up to date. So as Rails has come out with its new versions, he's updated the tutorial. I really, really like that. It's totally free. but I definitely tossed him the suggested donation or a little bit more after I had completed it, because it was just such a phenomenal resource. Just great description, and what I really appreciated about it is that you didn't need to have any background whatsoever in order to get into it. He really described everything that you were doing in a way that helped you even understand some broader concepts without overwhelming you too much. And then these railscast.com was invaluable as well. That does take having perhaps done the tutorial first, but it's just an incredible resource. I think there are there are hundreds and hundreds of these free webcasts. But in terms of picking between Python and Ruby, the big lesson is this. It doesn't matter. Vin already said that. But eventually you have to pick. And it's not that serious of a pick, and it's a very easy way of doing it. Do you know somebody who you can call for help? Do you know somebody who's good at Ruby? You know, do you know somebody who's good at Python? Do you know somebody who's good at something else? And if you do, and you can turn to that person in the really tough moments, you know, these tough moments are important. Like, it's important to power through. Something super confusing, it is so important to power through those moments. We'll talk about that. But, like, eventually you might need to turn to somebody, like a person, you know, and a person who's going to put up with your problems, right? And let you call on them, you know, a couple of times, maybe a week as you're getting started. And so if you do know somebody who knows one of those languages, you should pick that language. Because, you know, like Vin said, we could learn the other's language pretty quickly after we've already learned one language. But, you know, the funny thing is that you don't, because you don't need to. You know, it goes back to that need. Like, I've tried to do the Codecademy's JavaScript stuff, but I still don't know JavaScript that well. And like, I can't get through it. And the reason is because I don't need to get through it. Like, I don't actually need to know JavaScript for what I do. I have somebody else on my team who's doing the JavaScript. I really only need to know Ruby. So that's the only thing that I know. You know, and so, you know, you can't, it's hard to turn to somebody who doesn't know your language, because it is going to take a little bit of time for them to learn the nuances and try to help you out in that language. Not that they couldn't. They're obviously better than somebody that doesn't. But the way to pick is definitely by knowing somebody. And then second, if you don't know somebody, definitely scan over these different resources and figure out, okay, maybe, you know, the cool thing is these authors, the people that Vin's blog links to and the people behind both these resources, they actually make themselves pretty available on Twitter. So if you seem to think that one of these is more available than another one, you know, you should pick that way as well, because you really just need somebody that you can turn to in the tough times.
Yeah, I actually didn't have really a person that I could ask questions of. It's also my own sort of, you know, being sort of pathetic about asking people questions. So, but and as we go through it, I'll show you that, like, even if you don't actually have someone, that's okay. I didn't have anyone, and it was fine, because it's crazy how good this stuff is online. It's crazy. It's always, like, amazing to me. Like, you go to Wikipedia and how they did all that analysis that shows that, like, there are more words on Wikipedia about Star Wars than, like, the Civil War. You know, because people are, you know, because that shows you who's writing on Wikipedia. Like, there are more tutorials about this than, like, living life. Like, this stuff is super, super popular. Like, everyone writes about this stuff and reads about it. This is just something that I'll just briefly throw in, which is, this is what my co-founder learned. HTML and CSS is not programming. It's not. It's like, there's programming, and then there's HTML and CSS. HTML and CSS is just like a way to mark up text in a way that your browser is going to read it. So what that means is, like, you put a little, like, you want a word to be bold in a sentence, so you put a thing before it and a thing after it that makes it bold. Kind of like in Word, when you highlight something and then you press the B to make it bold, except in HTML, you can't highlight and press B. You put these little words that are, like, strong and then end strong, and it tells it, okay, from strong to end strong, this is going to be bold, and the browser knows how to read that stuff. This stuff is, like, my co-founder read this stuff. He has never programmed this stuff, like, super simple.
That being said, this stuff in HTML5 is probably more along the line. There are new things that you can do with HTML that would be I just want to be careful about not calling it programming for anybody who does do some more of the advanced stuff. But I think that the point here
it's
is
not
that,
programming.
But you don't. If you're building a website today, don't freak out that you're not doing HTML5. Like, keep your programming to your app for now, and worry about just doing the basic stuff on the front end.
Yeah. So, these are two books that my co-founder read and highly, highly sort of recommends. There's also in Chrome, there's like Inspector. There's this, if you ever right click on a website, there's like a little page inspector, and it pops up this thing from the bottom, and it shows you all of the HTML, and you can see that stuff is super valuable. Need help? I think we've sort of just talked about that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say about this is I had to, when I was learning, I had to institute this because I did have people I could turn to. The problem is, if you do, don't turn to them too quickly. I gave myself this thing called the 24-hour rule, which I came across a problem, and I really, really wanted to hit up my friend on instant message and be like, yo, dude, explain this thing to me, or I can't get around this problem. And that's really dangerous, right? Because what I found out is that I learned two things if I would try to solve the problem myself. One is I would just learn a bunch of other things, like along the way, right? The things that didn't solve my problem but are good to know, you know, just from all the Googling that I did. And then two, and this was the most important thing, and we touched on it a little bit before, but I learned that the way to get it to work isn't necessarily the right way to get it to work. You know, I was searching for the right way to get it to work, and if I asked my friend, he'd probably tell me the right way to do something. You know, and what I would end up building in that 24-hour period of time is I would build really, really ugly code. Like, really ugly code that worked. And guess what? That's so much better than beautiful code that worked 24 hours before. Because you're developing these problem-solving skills of, like, you know, how to get from point A to point B, and, like, the thing that I built went, you know, all over the room and back again, but guess what? I got there. And that's actually good. It's actually important. You know, it's weird to think that, like, ugly, bad code is good code, but when you're learning, it's the best code, because it shows that you're being creative, and it shows that you're, like, willing to get to that point no matter what it takes, even if you are contorting yourself in every which way possible and, like, coming up with really, really dumb ways to make it work. The point is that it worked, and you made it work, and in that process of making it work, you learned so much stuff. And then what will happen is, like, 3 months down the line, you'll, like, be coding something and realize, whoa, like, that thing that I built 3 months ago, I can rewrite it in, like, these three lines of code, and I now know exactly how to do it. And that's much more fulfilling than just turning to that person that you know and be like, dude, you know, help me out with this.
I think this for me, you know, I didn't really have anyone to ask, and Stack Overflow is a great example. When I was getting started, this was just getting started. It didn't really exist in the way it does today. This is a page from a website called stackoverflow.com. It was started by a bunch of people, including Joel Spolsky. And this is actually the Django part of Stack Overflow. What Stack Overflow is, it's a community where people can go and ask technical questions to each other, and they can tag them. So basically, this community, 29,000 questions have been asked. Just, you know, by different people that have been tagged with the word Django. And here's the crazy, crazy thing. 84% of those questions have been answered. 84%. It's just mind-blowing to me that this actually exists and this works, and these people have all answered them with no compensation of any sort. They just go in, and these are, like, really good answers. Very, very good answers. So I remember I was Googling. I would actually Google, you know, whenever you have a problem, you Google that problem. And it's crazy, but, like, someone has had your problem before, and they have an answer for it. Someone has taken the time to write this stuff out and put it up somewhere, whether it's on a blog or more increasingly on Stack Overflow, and it works, and it's there. So, you know, aside from Googling it, which is what I did all the time, which was awesome, Stack Overflow, you can actually submit questions. And the reason why people are going to answer these questions is they get these points. So you can see there's this little hierarchy of last 30 days and all time. These are, like, the people who've, like, you know, are the Django experts on Stack Overflow. And as you can imagine, you know, if these people are sort of freelancers, this is a great way for them to get jobs, because people who are looking for a great Django person, like, this list of people is probably a great list of people to start. And these, so it's very much in their interest to answer these questions. So it's awesome for you that you get to ask these questions. So this was huge, huge, helpful. Didn't exist 5 years ago. 5 years ago, this was like a crazy internet thing to try to find any of these answers.
And one thing that you'll see when you do use this service is when you go to submit a question, it tries to scare you off a little bit by just making, they don't want duplicate questions in there. And so you might end up spending a ton of time just trying to make sure that it's not a duplicate question. I would actually, you know, listen, you're all good people. As long as you're not just like putting every question up there that you have and you haven't spent the time trying to find somebody else's question before an answer, like, just post it up there. Don't be intimidated by, you know, their efforts to minimize the number of duplicate questions, because I certainly was. I certainly, a number of times I went to go submit a question, I thought, oh, I don't want people to think that I'm an idiot. Like, this is such an, I know this is such an easy thing, like, and I should really know this, but, you know, it's so easy, I don't want to post it up here because I'd look like an idiot, and people would get frustrated with me for posting such a simple question, and it just couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, so many of those questions that have been answered are from people learning and people asking, quote-unquote, dumb questions. And you just got to get past that, because they will try to scare you off, and you'll try to be polite, and then you'll think like it's polite not to post your question, and that it couldn't be further from the truth.
It's also like super fast. Like, you post these, like, you know, I would always like, oh, I'm gonna write a question, and like, you know, 3 weeks later someone's gonna get back to me, and I've already, like, you know, quit. Like, these they answer this stuff fast, You know, a great way to actually, that I would do whenever I kind of get like, I want to procrastinate or something like that, I would actually just go to Stack Overflow and I'd go to Django and I'd start reading the questions and the answers, other people's questions, other people's answers. And you can learn a ton by reading that stuff. And then here's the very, very, very awesome thing. At some point, you're going to read someone's question that hasn't been answered yet when you look at the new stuff, and you're actually going to know the answer, and you're going to be like, oh my God, like, I know what this person is asking. And then you're going to go and you're going to type it in and you're going to press submit, and then everyone's going to tell you you're an idiot. No, I'm joking. Everyone's going to upvote your answer, and then you're like, holy shit, I just taught someone else and I've been doing this for like 2 weeks. So I think it's a super, super cool resource, and unbelievable that they sort of went through the time to do this.
This is the other thing, which is that you're going to solve your own problems. Like I said, like, a lot of your problems you are going to solve and you're going to figure out, and nobody's solved them before. And, you know, it's just as important, even though you are a noob. Like, share that information, get it out there, because that Googling you were doing beforehand, it will, somebody else is going to be Googling the exact same problem one day. And it's really fun to get it out there. And I post a lot of my stuff to Forest, which is a community for developers and designers. But you could post it on any blog that you have, or anywhere else, even like on this site GitHub, where if you haven't used it before or heard of it, it's just where, you know, we store all of our, a lot of developers just store their code up on there. But they also have these things called gists, and it's just where you can just post some code and some notes, and it's just like a static page, and it indexes super well on Google, and so when people are looking for an answer, it's really gratifying to know that people are going to be finding that pain that you went through. Somebody else is going to have a much easier time because of you.
Another way that I thought was actually really helpful is in Django, there's something called DjangoSites.org, which are sort of more advanced websites that have been built using Django, and they've actually made it open source. Just means it's open, like, you can read the source code. Like, Windows is not open source, not that I know. I mean, it's definitely not. So Django Sites, it's awesome because you can learn a lot by looking at what, like, a pro has done. You know, someone who's more experienced than you. How did they build this site? How did they set up their settings file? How did their URLs file look like in all these apps? I think it was super, super helpful for me to be able to sort of go through that. In terms of what we built, I sort of did all this teaching and then of myself, and then I built a site called 140 It. That was sort of my first 3-day project. It was this stupid little thing when you were on Twitter and you were typing a message and you go over 140 characters and, like, oh, I got to shorten it. it was like a little bookmarklet that you can install where if you clicked it, it would take the message, send it to 148.com. 148.com would then like shrink the message by using common abbreviations and then just redirect you back to Twitter, and magically it would be less than 140 characters. Super stupid. It was like a weekend project, literally built it in 3 days, and then sent it to TechCrunch, sort of like, oh, I wonder if they'll write about it. And then like they wrote about it, and then like the first comment was Michael Arrington being like, I'm going to start using this. Now, he never actually used it, because I know that, but it was kind of unbelievable to me that I just sort of taught myself, I put this thing out there. All of a sudden, it was like, it started a controversy on Twitter at the time, because people were like, this is destroying tweets, because like I would take away all the vowels, and people were like, I can't read this anymore, and like, I hope Twitter bans this. And it was literally in my mind, I was like, what has happened? Like, you know, some weeks ago, I didn't even know how to do anything, and now I've started a controversy about Twitter through this little stupid project that I had built. And then from there on, I just, you know, kept doing it, and then we built Unhub, and then eventually we built Yipit, and Yipit was a 3-day project, and this is sort of the path that I took, which is we built it, and then I was able to recruit, you know, we got some traction, we got a ton of users, we raised money from Ron Conway and RRE and DFJ Gotham and IE Ventures, and we were able to then recruit an awesome technical team to join, and it's sort of gone in that direction, and that's been awesome. And all of this was possible because I sat down with that stupid book with the rat on the cover and taught myself, and it turned out that it was a lot easier than I ever thought it would be, and now any idea that I have, I can pretty much build, which is an awesome, awesome thing to be able to do.
And then I just built this this thing called O-Hours, and just talking about the need, like when I started running the New York Tech Meetup, I started getting a lot more people just asking for some advice or wanting to pitch me their startup so they could demo the New York Tech Meetup's like a demo platform in New York. And I always did that on the side, and I needed to somehow manage my time, so I started doing office hours, and I did it for a number of years, and I just always knew that there was something more that could go on besides just me using a dentist office scheduling tool to get people to, you know, sign up to come, you know, hang out with me for a little bit. And so I knew that this was like could change the world, and it just needed to exist. And I even, you know, throughout those years, I always, you know, asked my friends who were developers, like, hey, do you want to build this with me? Do you want to build this with me? And of course, it never got done, you know, which is why we're all here today. So finally, this was the thing. This was the thing that I just needed to build. And it's an office hours platform, which was real cool. I kind of highlighted this. My friend Harper, who's the CTO for Obama for America, like used it. Union Square Ventures uses it for all of their office hours. Actually, if you go on there now, like there's a ton of people down here at South by Southwest, developers, designers, venture capitalists, who are hosting office hours. And you know, the story behind this too, though, was that the real kick in the ass to do it is getting coffee with Vin, because I knew he had learned how to code, and I said, "Hey, dude, I really, really need to learn how to code. I really want to. Here are the few ideas that I have," and he said, "I'll be your first user. I'll be the first person to use O-Hours."
I never actually used it. No, I'm
no, and he
I was the first.
He literally was, and that was so cool to know. You know, I think it was so cool that sort of aha moment you had when you got that thing on TechCrunch and started that thing. That the aha moment for me was, there's one person in this world. I know I am going to release a product, and there's going to be two users, myself and this person, and then I win, right? I built a product that makes my life easier, and a good buddy of mine's life easier. Victory. And it became something more than that, and that was really cool. But that's all, you know, like that was the inspiration that I needed to do it, was building something that was going to make my life easier, better, his life better, and hopefully anybody who came to either one of our office hours lives better.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's, if like, I really, every time I talk to people about this, I know people just go home and be like, it's not for me. I can't be that person to do it. And it doesn't matter how much I yell at them and try to get them to do it and show them examples. For instance, Foursquare, Dennis Crowley, he taught himself to code. He realized he couldn't go around and find some person to build it for him, and he wanted it built, and then he taught himself how to code, right? So, like, this is actually pretty common amongst people. It's just like, you know, people, I guess, don't talk about it. It's kind of a secret, but, like, everyone in this room is 100% capable of teaching themselves to code.
It just might not be the right if you're not ready, if you're not capable of doing it, it's not because you don't have the skills or the intellect. And that was that first point that we tried to get across. If you're not doing it now, it might not be the right idea yet. You know, and that's okay. It's okay that if you're not ready to learn how to code because of that. Because you'll come up with more. If you're a person who comes up with ideas for cool shit, you'll always come up with ideas for cool shit. And eventually one of those things will just be so powerful, will put such a fire in your belly that you have to do this. But you can do it. You know, if you're not doing it, it's not because you can't do it.
It's awesome. Once you've learned how to code, it's crazy. Like, any idea you have in your mind, you could just, like, lock yourself up, and then you'll emerge, and then, like, it's crazy. You buy a URL, and then, like, you put it up on that URL, and then millions of people across the world could go to it if they want. It's crazy. Internet is crazy. You could literally expose this to so many different people. So it's, like, the best thing in the world to teach yourself to code. I feel like it's almost like modern day, like carpentry, like, you know, where back then, you know, if you didn't know how to use a hammer, right, like you couldn't build your house for your family or whatever the case may be. Like, I really think it's like, this is modern day carpentry. Like, I think everyone should know how to code. It's really, really awesome. You can accomplish amazing, great things. Everyone knows how to speak. Everyone knows how to write. Everyone knows how to read. I really think it's like a basic fundamental thing that everyone should have in their repertoire, because you can do anything with it. It's truly, truly awesome and a crazy, crazy thing. So it's 10:20.
Yeah, we should get into question Q&A, and you're more than welcome to come up with the mic, or if you want to shout it out, we can repeat the question as well.
Yeah, I just go ahead and talk loud.
Yeah. Well, and I'll repeat it.
Yes. Can you talk about like Codecademy or any of the other ones and what your thoughts are on those? You know, you've talked a lot about books and kind of locking yourselves in. Is that worth, I mean, what do you think about Codecademy and some of these other places?
I think the thing about Codecademy, it's an amazing resource. And if the thing that you really, really need to have built relies on JavaScript, right, it would be a great resource to dive in and give you that sort of like foundational framework that you need in order to move on to start building the thing that you really, really want. But if the thing that you really, really want is probably going to need more stuff on the back end, then, you know, and you can sort of half-ass it on the front end while you're learning the back end, then I would, you know, not do it, because I would focus my energies on the core, like that core offering that you want to provide.
I want to build a mobile browser site. What do you recommend I learn?
Well, the cool thing about a mobile browser site, you want to build something that works in mobile browsers?
Yes.
The really cool thing, and the other thing about why the front-end stuff doesn't matter that much either, unless that's like the core of your product, is there's these great frameworks out there that give you all the front-end beauty. You know, so whether it's Twitter Bootstrap for like web-related stuff, or jQuery Mobile for mobile stuff, like you don't have to worry about, okay, is this going to look really cool or act really cool in a mobile browser, is going to swipe and slide, because somebody's already done that on the front end. Again, it's, well, what's in the back end? What's the core offering that you need to provide? And then focusing on that.
And then following for a mobile app, is there a language?
Oh, I mean, I think getting into iPhone, like you're talking about iPhone and Android development, I think that's really tough to start. it's just, The reason why it's tough to start is because when something's compiled, so you might have heard something like being compiled language, it's like, the beauty of both Python and Ruby and in working both of those is literally you can make a change, refresh your browser, and that change is there. And like when you're learning, you really need that tactile sort of response. You need to be able to like make that change, see it immediately. And you can't do that with with mobile development. So I just would not start there.
Although, if that's what you really, really need is an iPhone app, your best bet is to learn how to build an iPhone app. Like, if it has to be what you desperately need. I mean, I think Codecademy is going to be huge, but I think I think Codecademy needs to get to the point where it's Django or Ruby on Rails, which is really the app, because I've seen a lot of people try to start Codier, and then everyone gives up. Because it's like, you don't really need to learn this specific JavaScript. What you really need to learn is like the app itself.
Yeah, it doesn't apply to what you actually want. You know, you don't want a dice game. You know, and that's like one of the lessons is build a dice game.
It's got to be something you want.
Right.
Hey, piece of advice I got from some guys who know how to code really well is if you want to do like Rails, you have to learn Ruby first. If you want to learn Django, you have to learn like Python first. Or Objective-C, you should start with C. is that sound advice, or should you just dive right into the, like, the kind of the language that you want to use?
Yeah, you know, I would just say that when I started, I didn't even know where the lines were between Ruby and Rails. You know, I just knew that the thing that I was doing was using Rails, and Ruby was the language I was using inside of Rails. But there were all sorts of things that I would, you know, methods I would call or actions that I would do that were Rails specific, and I just didn't know that. And I think being oblivious to sort of the technical details there is the right thing to do. As you're getting started, because it's just like, again,
so just go into it with a beginning mind,
dive in, get started, and then you'll start along the way. You'll be like, oh, that's Ruby, and then you'll be like, okay, I want to learn a little bit more about Ruby, but that's like after you've gotten underway and sort of gotten this stuff off your chest a little bit.
I spent 2 days reading that Python book, and I read the first 10 chapters, something like that, but I only really need to read the first 3 chapters. So it's literally like, the answer to your question is like, it's 2 days. Worst case scenario, it's 2 days. So I wouldn't worry so much about it. You know, the whole point is like, just get started.
Thanks. That was like a barrier of entry for me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I don't know if you guys have heard of Udacity, but there's a Stanford CS professor that's kind of broken off and started his own free online learning thing, and he's got a CS 101 course that I think is Python based. I was curious if you thought that was something that would be valuable, or if that would almost be like too much, or if you'd go more of the way of the tutorials and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's the same thing as the Codecademy problem, which is I did those courses. When I tried to learn this time, a month before I did the Sweat Lodge, I was just downloading every single Stanford and MIT thing on iTunes University, and I would just watch them, and it's the same problem. It doesn't apply to that thing that you want to build, you know? And so these concepts have no relevancy in your life, and you just you can't absorb them. That's why so many people go into CS in college and drop out, you know, of that program, because it just has no bearing on what they really, really want. And that's the thing about diving into these frameworks, is that's the first step of building something you really, really want. And when you follow one of these tutorials, you know, the lead up to it, you know, the setting it up and the installing of the plugins or the gems or whatever they're called, like, those are all things you need to do the thing that you want to do. And so you can feel that there is at least some sort of connection between what they're going over and what you're going to do. But the CS courses, there's no connection. You know, it will be interesting information to know maybe far out in the future, but not at first.
Yeah, my fear would be that, look, I think those CS courses are amazing, and everyone should take them, and they're great. On the other hand, my fear is that if you start with that, you're going to quit. You're just going to give up because you got... You know, you're tired from your workday, and you came home, and it's 7 o'clock, and, you know, Game of Thrones is on, and you're just like, oh, my God, you know, I have to go listen to this crazy professor. And then, like, I bet during that class, there will be, like, 3 moments of, like, huge excitement when you realize that the thing he or she is talking about directly relates to that idea that you want. And that's, like, the whole point of this, is, like, it has to be 100% of the time it relates to the idea that you want to build. And my concern was always recommending that stuff to people is that I think it's a path to quitting, is going down that road. And I think, because it's just hard, just try to just do whatever it takes to build that thing you want.
Thanks.
A question for you. For actually hosting your code and actually getting a server set up, you know, would you use one of the platform as a service, you know, as a starting point?
1,000,000,000%. So what you're talking about for everybody else is like, for Ruby, it's Heroku. And what do you use in Python? Do they have a Heroku equivalent?
No, they although you can use Heroku
or App
as well.
Engine, I guess, is...
You can use App Engine. You can use Heroku now. Which
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, then use Heroku. Like, there's no question, the first app that you do, you should use Heroku. Because, you don't have to worry about security. You don't even have to worry about your database. And you can make all sorts of mistakes. And it doesn't really matter. It just sort of... works. It's great. Pricing is amazing. And what it does is that it forces you also to use a set of tools that they've sort of vetted. So like, and that means there's going to be a lot of resources around those tools as well. So a lot of help and there's just a community around it as well. So if you know you're having problems, you know, you're like, oh, how do I get this, you know, Ruby app up and running on some Rackspace or Media Temple server? There's not going to be a ton of people on the web who have also gone through that problem and are posting stuff onto Stack Overflow. There are a trillion people using Heroku and have been posting questions and problems and all that stuff around it, and so it just works. And if it doesn't work, there's other people who have made it work.
And what's, and one more question, but what's your thoughts on investing in Node.js?
Again, I don't think, for me, I just like, I still don't understand what the heck it is, and I'm allowing myself not to. But the, I think the point of if there might be certain products that you want to build that need that. Very few need a specific technology. So again, it just doesn't matter. It's what is it that, you know, who can you turn to? Which code when you're reading it actually looks cooler than the other code, you know? Like but most things don't, doesn't matter which technology you're actually using.
I would say the only concern with Node.js is that it's still relatively new, so the documentation in my mind is probably not going to be as great. So when you're looking stuff up, there's not going to be as many Stack Overflow questions. The hosting solutions are not going to be as great. So like, you know, something like Ruby on Rails or Django has is way bigger communities that might be able to help you out. So my advice, like, I think there's a 99.9999% chance that the project that you want built does not require Node.js.
But there is some benefit of the context switching, right? Because you're going to have to do some front end and back end, you know, programming. So just to be able to have one language, you know, back and forth is might be helpful.
Could be. I literally, these projects can be built in 3 days. It's not helpful enough to justify you necessarily going down a path of a language that's not as well known or familiar to the community.
And a lot of the stuff you're going to do on the front end is going to be the raw JavaScript that you're going to be doing with Node.js. So like, you're just going to be finding somebody's jQuery plugin and being like, I don't know what this means, but if I change this one line, it does the thing that I want it to do. And, you know, again, like Vin just said, most projects, you can remain pretty dumb on the front end. And if you can, do it. Like, allow yourself to be dumb there because, you know, it takes too much to get smart in one area. And you're not going to then start doing writing, like, raw JavaScript stuff for the front end. I mean, even the best, you know, front-end engineers are using the best parts of jQuery and stuff like that. And that's what you're going to end up using, and you don't have to know. Like, I don't know JavaScript, but I've used a ton of jQuery plugins and gotten cool little effects where I needed them to mostly work enough.
Cool. All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. All right.